You can't plan for everything, but you can be ready for anything. That's where we come in. Northwest Insurance Agency covers the wait, what? Moments in life with real coverage, real people, and real fast help. We offer sombrero-style coverage that protects your possessions, your loved ones, and everything else that fits under a sombrero. Call us today for a quote at 855-887-5656 or visit us at nwagencies.com.
This is the On the Pony Express podcast,
part of the On3 Network.
Check out all the SMU coverage you need at ontheponyexpress.com. Now, here's your host, Billy Embody.
Billy Embody.
One, two, three. Let me go.
Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of the On the Pony Express podcast presented by our friends at Northwest Insurance Agency. I'm Billy Embody. Thanks for joining us on this huge day in SMU recruiting history. Give Mark Viasana a call at 214-352-5656. Talk about your insurance options after the show, because we've got a huge offensive line heavy show for you guys today. And one piece centers around a commitment from one of the best prospects to commit to SMU in the modern era of recruiting, and certainly the recent history of SMU football. And then we're going to be joined by the man that recruited him, or one of the men that recruited him, and that's SMU offensive line coach Garen Justice. And a lot of good things from our interview with Coach Justice, so we hope you guys enjoy that. But we're just going to kind of break down the news of the day, which is four-star offensive lineman Drew Evers committing to SMU. I'll kind of run you down this recruitment, run you down how we got here, because April 10th, 2023 is when Drew Evers and I followed each other on Twitter, and Drew sent me a note and said, thanks for the follow, Mr. Embody. And from there, you know, we've been talking on and off throughout his recruiting process, and one that has seen him ascend into one of the best and most highly recruited offensive linemen in the entire country. And he's now committed to SMU, a huge piece for the Mustangs as they get him on board, pushing them up inside the top 20 overall recruiting classes nationally. There's a lot to unpack with this recruitment. I'm going to do my best to do it. And this is why I don't necessarily, I don't believe in recruiting momentum, whether it's good, whether it's bad. Recruiting is always on the same timeline overall when kids generally take official visits. They make decisions. You have signing day in December. You have the original signing day in February. All of those things. The crazy thing about this year is we're now seeing the change with rev share and all of that being tossed into the mix here. We've seen NIL. We've seen agents. We've seen this. We've seen that get added into the fray recently. But you can be on a heater like SMU was in May, and then all of a sudden, kind of not too much happens. You know, they get some other commitments here and there. You see a week and a half really go by, and then SMU gets some bad news. They get some top targets go different places. And at the same time, they pick up Eddie Kelly. They pick up Ty Crethers. And you see, you know, at the same time, the light at the end of the tunnel for June into July approaching here soon. And you know there's decisions that are going to be coming. But during the course of June, these kids are taking these visits. You're hearing buzz about this school, about that school. And it's for SMU, which basically front-loaded their visits May 2nd and June 6th. I mean, that is really impressive for SMU to have built their official visit schedule this way. And so, we talked about it on the board a little bit at ontheponyexpress.com. And we... like, I didn't really think of it like this, but I went and looked back, and SMU brought in, I believe it was 33 official visitors over the course of the summer. And now they, with Drew Evers jumping on board, they have 19 commitments. So if you bring in 33 official visitors and have 19 commitments, you know, that's over half that have jumped on board. That's a really good number to be sitting at. So, And Drew Evers never released a timeline as far as when he was going to announce. He never said, all right, I'm going to make my commitment on June 26th. I'm going to do this or do that or have this big announcement at the end of the summer or what have you. So no one just really knew what he was going to do. And so all of a sudden, boom, SMU's gotten Drew Evers. And at the same time, they're trending for a couple of other big pieces, 2 4-star prospects. Another reason to subscribe to ontheponyexpress.com for just $1, you'd know who they are already. And so you kind of put that piece into it, and then all of a sudden it's, oh, okay, everything's fine and dandy. Look, there were unknowns with Drew Evers. And there were, the unknown was, and I guess I'll get into this in a moment, but we didn't have a commitment date from him. And nowadays, there is more of, hey, all right, I'm going to announce on the 4th of July, or I'm going to announce July 10th, or so-and-so's birthday is in the month of July, so I'm going to do it on their birthday. All of these things. And so when you try to assess SMU's recruiting class and SMU's recruiting efforts, you're looking at the 33-ish players that they got on campus for official visits. And they had, and every school has this, they had some guys that were going to visit, and then they drop off. You know, Dejon Moore, they had a couple other guys here and there who made commitments elsewhere. And other schools have that too. So you kind of like wash that out when kind of evaluating it. But what we knew was they were still in play. And in today's day and age, I've kind of learned this because this is all new still, or it's a change to the landscape, is you don't know how everything that is now involved with recruiting is going to impact these kids, or how they're going to go down the path of making their decision, or what have you, because it has changed. The process has changed for these kids, for the most part, who go down their decision timelines. And there were more so questions about the top end guys in terms of highly rated guys and what they were going to do. And, you know, we talked on the board about 4-star edge Landon Barnes. We talked on the board about, okay, longtime target Zach Turner. You know, we talked about Evan Goodwin, 4-star offensive lineman. We talked about Kenneth Goodwin, 4-star linebacker. Markell Dabney is an SMU, or was an SMU commit. He hasn't done anything publicly, but he's not going to be in this class, and he's going to end up going to Michigan. You know, we've talked about all these kind of things around all these different prospects and how different ways this class is going. And at the same time, guys hadn't made decisions, and some still haven't made decisions or announced their commitments and where they're going to go. So this is a prime kind of example where Drew Evers was pegged to go to Ohio State, and I'll get into that again when I kind of start to finish run down his recruitment. And so you immediately think, okay, it's over, or it's not looking good, and all those things. But this is why I try to say, look, guys, I don't know about this guy, or I don't know. Like, I truthfully sometimes don't know, but I'll often say, well, I know they're still in the mix. I know they're still involved in this one. And at this day and age, you want to be in that top two, top three of schools involved. And then the prospect makes their decision, and you could come away with them. You could not. And so it is a really interesting time to be covering recruiting, because there is so much changing in that respect of how kids are making their decisions and going down that process, if that makes sense. So Drew kept things close to the vest. He ends up committing to SMU. What we knew throughout this summer is that SMU was still in it. Drew just kind of kept things close to the vest as far as maybe where he was actually leaning. And lo and behold, he ends up going to SMU. So before we jump into it, because I feel like I've already kind of gotten off the track here a little bit, but I do want to remind you guys, of course, about our friends at StatusJet, statusjet.com. Reach out to David Henry and his team today. Plan the trip of a lifetime in football season as they get geared up to fly SMU fans around the country, and you get the discount, okay, on your round-trip flight. When you mention On the Pony Express or Pony Up ACC, that will get you a discount on your round-trip flight. So make sure you book with StatusJet, book the trip of a lifetime, and be able to share it with your friends, family, work colleagues, whoever you want to bring. make it a trip with Status Jet. All right. Let's try to run this down and stick to Drew Evers and Drew Evers only, because this is a massive pickup for SMU. And I want to obviously give it the right amount of attention, because he is one of the most highly recruited, or probably the highest recruited prospect SMU has gotten in the Rhett Lashley era, in the modern era of SMU. That includes, you know, your Preston Stone, your Draymond Odoms last cycle, Jalen Cooper last cycle, Papunga Katoa Katoa. You know, there are a lot of prospects that have offers from all over the country, because they can get them early, they can blow up late, but only so many get to go on a run of official visits and be courted and pushed for by this official visit lineup: LSU, Ohio State, Penn State, Texas A&M, where his parents went to school. He also had offers from Oklahoma, from Texas, from Alabama, from Georgia, Michigan. I mean, the list kind of goes on for Drew Evers and his recruiting process. And it started early, and SMU was one of, if not the first offer for him. I'd have to go back and check on the offer front, but very, very early on. I mean, I have pictures of Drew Evers at SMU spring game, probably going into his freshman year, maybe going into sophomore year. And I mean, that's how long SMU's been after him. And Drew Evers told me he's probably visited SMU 8 times or so over the course of his recruitment, which is a lot. And of course, they're in his backyard, and so it's relatively easy for him to get to. But at the same time, Drew's older brother does play quarterback at UConn and has played at multiple programs around the country. And the family does, Nick Evers, try to go see Nick's games. And so that takes away other visit opportunities. So for them to have gotten him on campus 8 times over the course of his recruitment is really impressive. And Drew has always shown up and been enthusiastic. He'll never say a bad word about a school. And I spoke with him on the phone shortly before doing this podcast. And to break down his decision, I guess I'm jumping all the way to decision, he just said, look, I took my visits. I enjoyed them. I did not have one bad experience. I don't have anything bad to say about any other schools. I just realized I could get everything I wanted in my own backyard. And I think that's pretty powerful. And of course, you know, people are going to bring up NIL this, NIL that, SMU back at it. Look, all these kids are going to get money. All of these prospects are going to be pulled in different directions because of the landscape of what we're dealing with here in college football. And it's going to be, for some, the driving factor. For Drew, it wasn't. And, you know, he told me pretty straight up and has been fairly consistent with this in the course of his recruitment. I mean, NIL is so low on his radar. And truthfully, he said location is as well. Like, I'm ready to go somewhere that I can be developed, that I can do this, I can do that. You know, and I would have gone wherever. It just happened to be SMU and staying in my own backyard. And that's how it played out for him. But he went back to his oldest and longest and best relationships being with the SMU coaching staff. And Garen Justice has been recruiting him for years. It really made him a priority from the beginning. And that's something that can't be discounted in it, and certainly wasn't by Drew. And so he was getting into decision-making mode, and he had gone on his official visit to SMU all the way back May 2nd. And, you know, shared with me, hey, this is a visit that just went so well. I knew everything about SMU, but it just kind of reinforced everything that I already knew. And I think back then that said a lot. I think the goal for SMU was, of course, to get him committed out of that visit. But the good thing about SMU is they were really respectful of his process and going through it, because this is a family that has also gone through the recruiting process with Nick. He's transferred a couple times. He's a quarterback, so it's a little different, but it is one of those things that you kind of have to respect that a little bit as well, that they want to really, really go through everything that they can when it comes to the decisions he needs to make. And that's where he's been able to, you know, I think, really sit back, know that he isn't going to get swayed or pulled by the world of official visits and the world of what is this team going to do for me? What is, you know, all the glitz and the glam of it. And I think that's kind of the important side of it for Drew, and what he was looking for in a college. He knew what he wanted, and he sat down to kind of start making his decision. And, you know, he told me, hey, I was, you know, sitting down to call the coaches to ask a couple more questions. And, you know, I thought to myself, do I really need to know this or that? And it's going to impact my decision either way. And he realized, no, whatever questions he had wasn't going to be this massive piece to his recruitment. And he felt like, I wanted to go to SMU. And so he actually called Rhett Lashley, called Garen Justice, and this was last night on Wednesday evening, and just said, hey, you know, I've got a question for you. And, you know, asked them a question, let them answer it. And then, you know, he said, you know, I've got one more thing for you. And he, you know, zipped down his jacket, and he was wearing an SMU t-shirt and committed to them. So really special moment for him. Tyler Foster was another key piece in this recruitment. SMU's assistant running backs coach, who, you know, Drew said they had to mess with him a little bit, kind of pull his leg before giving him the good news. But this is a massive pickup for SMU, a guy that can play all five positions. He could play right tackle, I think, at the next level. He could end up being a starting guard relatively early in his career. I mean, this is another piece of the puzzle for SMU, is they've been pushing the Drew Evers can play early if he comes in and does what he'd like to do, or does what they need him to do early on, he can play. You know, Logan Parr graduates, Savion Bird's out the door. Obviously, Draymond Odoms is expected to be the left tackle long-term and kind of that franchise cornerstone. But Drew Evers has a real chance to play just about every other position on the offensive line when it comes to, you know, when he arrives at SMU in January, getting to work, getting with Grizz, and getting into that weight room. So, you know, sometimes these kids know where they want to go. They set a decision date a long way out. And at the same time, you know, there are some that eventually come to the realization that they're ready. And he hit up Hayes Fawcett, and I found out kind of, you know, right before it happened that it was going to happen, and was able to not have the story completely done by the time he did it, but was ready enough where things really got moving quickly. And we were able to, you know, have our friends at ontheponyexpress.com covered with that. So a big recruiting win for SMU, a massive moment in the history of SMU recruiting, truthfully, and a moment that Rhett Lashley, Garen Justice, they hope that they're looking back in what would be 4 years from now and going to go visit him visit with him in the green room of the NFL draft, because he's got that versatility. He could be, you know, an early round NFL draft pick with his ability to play all over, and he'll probably be a guard at the next level, just from what we've seen with the NFL. But he could play tackle in college. He could play guard. He could even play center, because he's so smart and he's tough. And this is a massive pickup. And I do want to get into the actual recruiting, like, nuggets of how does somebody who's predicted 94% to go to Ohio State end up at SMU. And we'll do that in just a moment. But do want to remind you guys about our friends at the Thomas Auto Group. Appreciate Brandon Thomas and their entire team at Brandon Thomas Mitsubishi for taking care of me and my family when we purchased a new vehicle. That everything was first class. We enjoyed it. And those processes can sometimes be difficult. So we appreciate them taking care of us with the Thomas Promise and employee pricing on new and pre-owned vehicles at all four Thomas Auto Group dealerships, whether it be Bob Thomas Ford or Brandon Thomas Subaru, Volkswagen, or Mitsubishi. Head up 75 to McKinney right now, or go to thomasautogroup.com for more details and to pick out your next ride. So Drew Evers ends up committing to SMU, and kind of the backstory here is Drew obviously took his SMU official visit May 2nd. And on that weekend, there were several prospects that ended up committing to SMU off of that group. I mean, you had, going back to it, here was the group: Landon Barnes, Andre Clark, Christian Rhodes, Sam Utu, Aljero Miles, Drew Evers, Alistair Vallejo, Calvin Thomas, DeQuane Prevost, Kenneth Goodwin, Tiki Ola, Papunga Katoa, Markel Dabney, Andre Nickerson, and Braylon Edwards. They got Andre Nickerson, Braylon Edwards, Markel Dabney, who's now, you know, going to be moving on. They got Papunga Katoa. And then from there, they got Aljero Miles. They got Christian Rhodes, who was already committed. They've kind of been, you know, a pretty good hit rate. Like, there are other schools out there right now that probably brought in, because SMU really only did two big official visit weekends, and then they had three come in for officials on June 20th weekend. The other schools out there are doing big official visit with double-digit visitors most of the time every single weekend of June, plus using some of those April and May official visits. So you're talking about other schools doing 50, 60 official visits. I mean, SMU's hit rate here is pretty good as far as when they bring guys in for official visits. They know that they're truly in the recruitment and they're heavily in the mix. So when you look ahead to the June 6th, they had multiple commits come in who are already committed, but they also picked up Isaiah Young, a couple others, things like that. But during this time, Drew Evers went through spring ball, and I think finished up spring ball after taking his SMU visit, and then ends up going to LSU. He goes to Ohio State. He goes to Penn State. He goes to Texas A&M. You're talking about, and especially for an offensive lineman, like that group of schools, I mean, Will Campbell is just top 10 pick at LSU. You have Penn State that's produced a ton of linemen. Ohio State just won the national championship. Texas A&M is where his parents went. They, you know, do produce NFL talent. They've not won much, but Mike Elko's kind of got a little bit of a thing going. I think they have the number two class in the country right now. And you're just kind of like, okay, man, the goal would have been for SMU to get him committed or at least get a silent and let things play out. And you hope that it ends up going public. But that didn't happen. And so as you kind of, in my shoes, evaluate this one, you're like, all right, I don't think he's going to go to LSU. I don't think he's going to go to Penn State. The wild card was kind of A&M. Because his parents went there, but I just never got a sense from talking with people, sources, even Drew, I just never got a sense that they were going to be the school for him. And I don't know why, just sometimes you have to rely a little bit on the gut here, but he had a great relationship with Brad Davis at LSU. They did a good job recruiting him. Same with Penn State. I think Phil Troutwine is their offensive line coach. Yeah. And he's one of the best in the country. But I just never got the sense that he was going to go to either of those places. And it was just really – and I had a couple conversations around Drew Evers with a couple of sources earlier in the spring. And I've said this a couple times on the board, and it's funny. I went back and an article popped up on Drew's profile. I said the must-get recruiting targets for SMU in 2026. And Aljero Miles was one. Drew Evers was another. Papunga Katoa was another. Daryl Campbell, a four-star defensive lineman from Katy Paytow, was in there. Isaiah Young, linebacker who committed to SMU over Baylor. Deuce Gilbert, corner who committed to SMU over Oklahoma. And then Chris and Carter Stewart. And I had those in there because I knew they were pushing heavily for Chris at the time. And it was kind of one of those things where you're like, okay, you can take a Texas commit, whatever. I didn't know when I wrote that article back on April 10th, that SMU would have been able to pull off the flip of Jakai Anderson from LSU and get that done. That had just started. They had literally just offered him, if I have my timeline right. And so if you know, they end up missing on Daryl Campbell, he still ended up taking some visits. So who knows? Maybe that'll change in the fall. But then they end up, you know, really not pressing for Chris and Carter Stewart. So my must-get, different from their must-get, but they were able to find a way to get all of these guys and land them. And it's just impressive work. But around that time, I had a conversation with a couple sources, and it was made clear to me that Drew Evers was SMU's probably I don't know the exact ranking of their board or anything. I'm not privy to that. But man, this was like one of their guys. They had to get him, have to get him. And they knew what they were up against, but they just felt like they were going to be able to land him. Rev Share was in a good situation. You know, all of those things that, you know, are part of the conversations now. And the interesting thing is Drew told me his parents would not share with him what the NIL and Rev Share situation was at each school until after he made his decision. And they would share what that school's situation is. So it's pretty cool to see that come together for him, where he makes a decision on his own. And then obviously it's going to pan out for him once he's on campus in that respect. But yeah, you're just wondering, can you survive Ohio State at that point? And I think I just made a pun around the Netflix thing that just came out. So I'm sorry about that. And I haven't watched that. I don't even know what it's about, but Drew Evers goes to Ohio State and tells a few people that Ohio State is number one and that they made that big of an impression. And so that's where you saw the predictions come in. And then time goes by and he gets into decision-making mode and just, he realizes that SMU is the place for him. So it's crazy how this recruiting world can kind of change on a dime in a sense. But when you have a kid as mature as Drew, like, we're going to go out and do a sit-down interview with Drew, and I would imagine you guys are going to all be in the comments being like, wow, what an impressive young man. And he is, great family, great people. So this is a huge, huge, huge historic recruiting win for SMU. Gone on long enough about it, but I feel like I tried to cover it as best I can on that front. But you guys tell me in the comments if I did that. But this is a huge recruiting win for SMU. Really just kind of, I think if there's one recruit, I would say this cycle that gives you that like staying power type of statement, it's Drew Evers. And that's not to discount Aljor Miles, Papunga Katoa, flipping Ja'Kai Anderson from LSU, all these things. But man, Drew Evers was straight up, a month and a half ago, took his SMU official visit and then goes on on the board, murderer's row of official visits to survive and hang on. And they did it. And so you got to give Garen Justice a ton of credit. I think he's going to have a really, really good offensive line class when it's all said and done. And, you know, we'll see who else jumps in the boat. But that's why you should subscribe to On the Pony Express for just $1 for your first week. And make sure you guys are on there. And by the way, before we get to our interview with Garen Justice, two more things. One's an ad read, but the first one is I was about to walk out the door to go interview new SMU president Jay Hartzell when this happened. And so a really, really kind of wild moment. Like, you know, Jay Hartzell can't talk about recruits, of course, but I walked in and, you know, was going to be there probably about 15 minutes earlier than I ended up being to, you know, full setup and kind of be waiting in case he got there early, and ended up getting there, you know, right when he got there basically. And luckily we're a pretty quick setup crew on the camera front with our podcast setup, but look forward to that interview with Jay Hartzell. It's going to drop on July 1st at ontheponyexpress.com. We're going to have a podcast piece to it, and we're going to have a written piece. They're two totally separate things. And we spoke about athletics. We spoke about campus infrastructure. We spoke about him learning on the job, but learning about SMU and all the things he's trying to learn. And then in the, you know, written side, we dove into some topics like capital campaign, endowment, strategic plan for the university. So there's a bunch of stuff, and it's going to drop on July 1st, which will be, if you guys are a longtime listener of the site, of this podcast, please subscribe to the site on July 1st. That's all I'm going to say. We've got some great perks. We're going to do something really special that we've never done for the site. And we're going to do it on July 1st. So be on the site. That's the one-year anniversary of SMU getting into the ACC. And there will be big recruiting news happening that day as well. So come join us. Come join us on the site. It's been a blast. So without any further ado, we'll get to Garen Justice here in just a second. But, of course, want to remind you guys about our friends at Mignon as well. Head up Preston Road or head over to Mignon on Preston Road in Plano. They've been there for decades producing absolutely stunning meals, ambiance, and atmosphere right there with on their little lakeside patio. And they've got, of course, indoor dining room, private dining area. They've got a great bar. And I can tell you the amount of people that have texted me from, you know, the SMU side of things when Drew Evers committed, you know, they should be having a party at Mignon tonight over that recruitment. So got a great wine selection, great cocktails, and they do dinner 7 days a week and brunch on Sundays. So make your reservations on Open Table. They're SMU owned. So make sure you head over to Mignon in Plano and enjoy one of the best meals you'll have in the DFW area. So without any further ado, we get to our interview with SMU offensive line coach, Garen Justice. Welcome back to the On the Pony Express podcast. Really excited to be joined by SMU offensive line coach Garen Justice. Thanks so much.
Yeah, of course.
Getting you out of the heat from summer workouts.
Yeah, anytime.
We could sit down with you for at least an hour because, one, you have so many guys.
Yeah.
So many new faces, returning guys, all the things. Your group has got to be one of those groups that this coaching staff that feels really excited about, you know, with who you brought in, who you have returning. It's just in a really good place from what it seems like.
Yeah, we think so. I mean, you're always hesitant to say that because you get three injuries and now you're tested right away. We're really, really optimistic about what we have in the room. We feel like 2 years ago we started to kind of establish of getting a quality room and then move forward. Last year we felt like we continued to change our physical status and the way we were operating. And I think this year is no different. In the past, it was been a 290-pound guy who was athletic was a good guy to have in the room. Now you start talking about the P.J. Williams and Addison Nichols and Logan Pars. Those guys are all 320-pound plus and carry it really well. And so mass moves mass, like big people hurt smaller people or move smaller people. And I think we're getting to the point where we have big people who are also really, really athletic. And we're starting to get it in more than just three or four guys. We have close to a two deep of guys that are big and physical and can move like that.
I mean, I don't even know where to begin with breaking down this group, but I do want to start with PJ and then kind of lead into, you know, a guy like Andrew Chamblee, but PJ's development and what he did in the spring, I mean, that might have been one of the more individually impressive springs that I've seen.
Yeah.
Not only just from the offensive line, but, I mean, right up there with, like, what an Elijah Roberts would do.
To yeah.
As a time. I mean, he was just that good.
Yeah, he was – there's a little bit of – with PJ, I think there's – we got to make sure we keep him simulated because some boredom could set in from that standpoint because he is having that much success. And it's been a cool journey for him. From 2 years ago, he was a guy that – and he was talking about the value of playing multiple guys. Like, we saw that talent and ability in PJ, but just mentally he wasn't there yet. And we slowly eased him along, and it allowed him to have a really good year last year. And PJ's fully looking at this year like he's trying to go out and be the most dominant offensive lineman in the ACC. And that's the way he's approaching it. And I hope he does, because
yeah,
it'll be good for the Mustangs, and it's just the whole PJ story of just getting him from A&M to where he is at now. Like, man, just so proud of him, and to see his family and all those things. It's a really cool journey, and I'm excited for this year with him.
And his story, I mean, not talked about enough, I would say. Just, you know, how he came in here and embraced being at SMU, embraced all the things, mm-hmm, it seemed like, at least from the outside, that you guys threw his way.
Yeah.
Obviously, you guys hope to use that in recruiting or this or that, but like just pure success of development.
And really, I mean, it's, I mean, as in the transfer portal and NIL and the things that we've had to live with as far as college sports the last couple of years, he's had plenty of opportunities to leave. People try to poach him, and PJ, to his credit, has, at his lowest, we were one of the few schools that took a chance on him, and he respects that and he honors that, and he's been really, really loyal to that process. And he knows that he could have hopped in the portal and got more money and do all those things, but he also knows he's in a really good situation, and he's with people who care about him and people who had his back when he was in a really bad spot. So it's been cool from both sides of it. We've helped him out, and he's helped us out, and it's been a really, really good relationship.
What's it like with Andrew Chamblee, you know, right there, right now? It seems like at that right tackle spot, just the work he's done to, you know, develop, and he had that injury that really held him back, you know, just from an early standpoint, it seemed like last year, you know, those big guys really get, you know, those type of injuries.
Yeah, speaking of Chamblee, like Chamblee, I think, gives us the flexibility now to where you talk about a PJ, and when PJ plays in the NFL, he may be a guard. And like we've experimented and played with bumping PJ in a guard and putting Chamblee at tackle, more so from standpoint of the progression that Andrew's made. We feel like PJ could play wherever and be one of the best linemen we have. But Chamblee's a guy who at times has it's been hard for him to gain weight. It's been hard for him to put on strength and do those things. And we've challenged him in January. It's like, hey, if you have talent, you have ability, you have size, you have length, you have all those things, if you want to take the steps that you want to take to put yourself where you want to be, you have to gain that weight. You have to get the strength. And now I think he's up to 308. His strength numbers are going up. I think he was squatting over 400 pounds for reps the other day in the weight room. So he's finally put himself physically in a position to where now he's not going to get overpowered or manhandled on a couple blocks. He can anchor in and do those type things. So really, really excited about where he's at. And he's a guy that is going to really push, if not be one of the starters we have this year.
Addison Nichols comes in and just seems like that center spot, you know, maybe guard wherever, but center's where we saw him a lot this spring. Is all settled and taken care of with the Eagle Scout running the show.
Oh, yeah. Addison's done a really good job from a standpoint of he's transferred in, he's new, but he's done a really, really nice job as far as trying to take a leadership role within the room. I think everyone kind of honors and looks at Logan Parr as kind of the grandpa or the old man in the room that's kind of the leader, but Addison's been really, really vocal as far as trying to bring guys together and do some things where he's empowered himself to go do that. Addison, you talk about physicality. I mean, that's a guy that's – you don't see many interior offensive linemen who are 6'5", 330 pounds and can move and do the things he does. And he's a well-rounded guy. I mean, as far as – he's a true student-athlete, really, really good in the community. Really, really good football player. So we're excited about what this season's going to look like for Addison.
You mentioned Logan Parr, and like you said, the kind of elder statesman of the room, it seems like. What's his journey been like? Because kind of, again, a player that, you know, leaving his prior stop was in a bad place probably with the game of football, at least from what he's told us. And now he was the highest rated player on the game, you know, last year.
You know what, Logan – as a coach, it's always the easiest when your best players do the most things the right way. And everyone in the room knows that Logan's one of our best players. So you're looking at a guy who's got 3 degrees now. He does everything the right way. He's a model citizen. He's really good on the field. It's hard for some of those guys who are not playing as much or not as talented to act any different. Because that's the way Logan acts. It's like, hey, Logan Parr does all the things the right way. He's one of the best players we have. He's one of the guys who probably could get away with some stuff, and he doesn't. So what excuse do you have? And I think that's the biggest thing. Logan's vocally doing better and better with that, but he's one of those guys he truly has led by the way he lives his life. And everyone in the locker room respects Logan. I would be shocked if Logan wasn't one of our captains this fall, voted by our players, because everyone sees who he is on a day-to-day basis. And you have a guy like Logan. I think him and Hibner are roommates now, and like we got a lot of like-minded guys in the building who are focused on being really, really good football players, but also being great students and great in the community.
Savion Bird, left tackle. I mean, he stepped in and really settled that position down, had some really good games. You know, Donovan Ezraku held without a sack. Obviously, the end of the season is what people are going to focus on, but he's a really solid option there at left tackle for you guys. And then you also have Zion Nelson. You got Draymond Odom. Where is that position kind of stand?
And you also have Andrew Shambly. That's another guy who and really the motivate going back, I'll talk to about Savion, but the motivation with Shambly at right tackle has been he feels really, really comfortable already at left tackle. We're just trying to balance him out.
Okay.
So our thought with him is, okay, let's put Andrew in a place to where if I have to put him in a game at left or right tackle, now he feels comfortable on both sides. I know he feels really comfortable at left side, so let's even out his body and even out his reps. I think people just assume you can play left side and right side and it's easy. Well, there's some differences between staggering your left foot and staggering your right foot and the comfort that happens there. And some people are really smooth with it. Some people are dominant one side or the other. And Andrew's not bad either way, but we felt like we needed to balance him out. And now that gives him flexibility to play on either side. So he's a guy that would factor into that. But really, really proud of Savion from a standpoint of, and again, we referenced a couple of those other transfers. Savion, where he's at now compared to when he came in, is a different person. And he's a guy that is much more responsible, has a better day-to-day life and how he functions and does some things. And you're seeing that show up in the weight room. You're seeing it show up with his consistency on the field. He's mentally locked in on what we're doing. And, the Savion is one of those guys. He's one of my favorite players to coach because there's an element to him that I don't always know what he's going to do, and he keeps me on my toes. But I love him. I love him as a person. I love him as a player. He's got a good heart. And he's a guy that, again, I expect him to be better this year than last year. I mean, you look at the beginning of the last season, we didn't really know where or how to fit some of those guys in. And you saw Savion play really a lot of September. He was at guard. And he was on both sides of the ball at guard. Didn't start the Nevada game for academic reasons. So there's a lot of things that you saw that just weren't quite in place or settled with Savion. And I think October on, we were able to settle him out a little bit. And we actually put him at his high school position. And a lot of people may say he's a guard. I think Savion's a lot like PJ. I think he can play a lot of different positions. It just happened to be we felt like we were a little more guard heavy. And Savion could do whatever we asked him to do. And he's a football player. And so he went out there. And again, same thing, I'm expecting a big year from Savion. And then you throw a guy like Zion Nelson into the fold. If Zion's healthy, he'll give Savion a run for his money, because Zion, when he was healthy, was really, really good. Now, that's a big if. We got to get Zion healthy. But I think between Savion, Zion, Shambly, and even Draymond, I think those are four guys that all, one of them individually or a combination of, I think we'll be all right at the left tackle position.
You mentioned Draymond, him, Abel have made it to campus. What are the early impressions that you've gotten from Grizz and you've now been able to really, you know, see them in this environment work out?
Yeah, I think, I know we're, you want each recruiting class to be a little bit better. And as a recruiter, you always want to try and recruit the same or better than what you already have on the team, and which is making it harder and harder to recruit right now, because I feel like we got some good players in-house. But I think we've done that with Draymond and Abel. We've got two guys in the building that physically are pretty close to being ready right now. Athletically are both guys. I mean, you see Abel walk around. Abel's 350 pounds, and you would have no clue he's 350 pounds. Draymond's 310 pounds and runs agility cones and stuff like he's a DB. Like, so they've got to learn. There's a growing curve. I think sometimes fans, and they see the board, the stats and the recruitment and all that, and they say, oh, wow, how come that guy's not starting? How come that guy's not playing? There's some mental aspect to it from just learning, comfort, getting up to the speed of the game. Also, maybe there's not as much of a need year one, because we talk about Zion, Savion, Chamblee, those guys. Like, those guys all were four-star guys, too, out of high school, and they're 4 years older. So I don't think there's this pressing need for those guys, which in my opinion is actually better for their development and better for their growth, because now they don't have the pressure that they have to be the guy. Now, if they come in and kill it and they're the guy, then we're going to play them. But I just think we also have to temper expectations and let those guys develop how they want to develop. They both, as long as they stay humble and work and do the things they're supposed to do, they both will be big-time football players here. And they have a chance to be two of the better ones we've ever had, just athletically and what they've done. We'll just see how their development goes. I'm excited to see when we actually have real contact and put those guys in football drills, how they react. But they're both competitive. The thing they both have, too, is they don't have a fear from a standpoint. They're not necessarily intimidated by older guys or any of those type of things. So Abel loves football. You put a football here and he'll throw it and play it. Like, that's who he is. So really, really excited about both those guys, and they both fit in with the room pretty well already.
And with your group, you've got a lot of guys who have now kind of been here for a minute. You know, Graham Uter, Alex Woods, King Large, a couple others I'm sure that I'm leaving off. How's the development of those guys going? Obviously trying to push guys. But
yeah, I think, like I said, I think the floor is rising. I mean, you talk about Graham and King and those guys. Those guys 2 years ago would be 6th, 7th guys, like deep in the mix of what we're doing. Now, again, we're almost stockpiled a little bit, and they're log jammed a little bit as far as waiting their turn. But they're all those guys are progressing. They're all better versions of themselves. A guy that's just quietly went on the radar and has gotten a lot better is Nate Anderson. Nate Anderson's a guy who's been here a couple of years. Nate's got a good shot of being our starting right guard. So, Nate Anderson, Josh Bates, like, I know Josh is a transfer we got here. Again, you go King and Graham and Sione Mao, like Paris Patterson, like there's some bodies in there that make you feel pretty good about where we're at. And we just gotta figure out the right combination, figure out how we want to do it. I think that's the biggest challenge we have going into the year is also how do you keep our job first and foremost to win games, but you also got to plan for the longevity of a season. I think there's something to, if I'm a backup player and I'm not starting, but I know that there's a possibility I'm going to play some snaps on Saturday, we're going to have a lot better quality practice in a week. And even if that guy's getting 10 snaps, he's going to be more focused when we're meeting. He's locked in on what we're doing. And now that just makes the room get that much better. And if you do have injuries, no one even bats an eye when you have that. So that's the biggest challenge I'm going to have, is figuring out what is that combination, what is that five, and then what are the rotations and what do we want to look at and how do we want to try and blend guys in. And I wish I knew the answer to that fully. I don't. That's why we practice. But we have ideas in mind. We think there's some different combinations we can win with and have a lot of success with.
I was going to ask you, you know, last year, obviously you go to Nevada, a lot of changes after that mm-hmm. game, and just kind of the early season, finding yourself as a unit came to be. How much did you guys take away from that kind of experience? And I'm sure it's happened before, different places or different moments, but, you know, that Baylor game is
I know. Record. Well,
and
we don't want to have what happened last year happen again, to where we should lose versus Nevada, lost versus BYU, until you kind of figure out, okay, this is who we are, this is what we need to do.
Yeah.
The problem was last year is we had some – Andrew Chamblee got injured the fourth day of practice. We were anticipating him being a tackle. Savion had a horrendous 3-day stretch at tackle where we're like, I don't know if this guy can do it. And So then you panic and reshuffle. And so, like, we also need to have a good August camp. We need to have a good August camp. Guys need to stay healthy. Guys need to give themselves the best chance to compete so we can get the best evaluations. And if we can do that, then that'll make it'll make it easier for us to put the right guys on the field, because we'll be able to get a true view of all of those guys as far as how they do it. But yeah, that's the challenge. That's what we've got to figure out. But we don't want to be playing musical chairs in the middle of September when we got a big time non-conference game coming here the second week.
Well, this has been a blast, but I do want to ask you last question. What, having Kevin back there, he can do so many things. He can escape. Off schedule. What's that like for your offensive lineman to kind of? It takes a minute to really learn where he could be.
You know what? And I would say this. So, in the pocket, Preston was probably a lot more unpredictable than Kevin from the standpoint. Preston, he looked. He scrambled to continue to throw. Whereas Kevin will sometimes do that. He'll scramble out, but Kevin is in the pocket, it's there, throws it, or in the pocket, it's there, see you. Yeah. The thing that both those guys have allowed us to do protection-wise, we're pretty aggressive as far as how we set guys. Our thought process on that is we want to make as firm of a pocket as we can so he can see down the field. And also, if we whiff and miss, that's that much more space for him to make the guy miss. So we're pretty aggressive as far as how we set stuff. But Kevin's a guy that he makes you look a lot better than what your sack numbers are. And I think you always talk about sack numbers is if you have way too many sacks as a team, the O-line gets way too much blame for that. If you don't have that many sacks given up, O-line gets way too much credit for that. It's a team number. So Kevin definitely helps with that team number. I mean, you talk about Ezeraku from Boston College. He clearly had a sack one time, and Kevin just made him miss and was able to go around him. So he definitely is a guy that I know our guys have a lot of comfort level in, our guys have a lot of belief in, and we're really excited to see his season this year.
Well, thanks so much for taking a lot of time
with us
and spending some time on the Pony Express podcast.
Anytime, Billy. All right.
Thanks for watching this edition of the On the Pony Express podcast, or listening wherever you catch us, Apple or Spotify or wherever. We appreciate all you guys listening, and we hope you guys enjoyed this podcast. It's been a crazy, crazy week, and we're looking forward to having you guys on the site on July 1st. So again, check us out, ontheponyexpress.com. Catch you guys next time. Appreciate our friend Mark Viasana. 214-352-5656, or email him info@nwagencies.com to discuss your current insurance coverage, how they could save you money and get better coverage as well. So thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll catch you next time on another edition of the On the Pony Express podcast.
Thanks for listening to the On the Pony Express podcast with Billy Embody.
Follow us on your socials on X at SMU on 3 and on Instagram at On3SMU.
And keep it locked to OnThePonyExpress.com for more coverage.